At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Juan Castillo, and this is the Electric Drum. Now, I have a young woman here in the studio who I've been trying to get on the Electric Drum for many, many years. You know her. You have to know her. Her name is Diane Brown, and she's the branch manager of Stetson Library. She grew up here in the city of New Haven, and she's doing so much for our youth. How you doing today?
I'm doing great, Juan.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, you know, on this show, we're talking about everything. We're talking about your life. So you grew up in New Haven. Talk about growing up here.
Yes, I grew up in New Haven, one of six children. Grew up in New Hallville on Division Street, and had a very, very nice upbringing. I went to Abraham Lincoln School, which was located across the street from my home on Division Street. I attended there for 2 years, and from there I went to Catholic school, St. John the Baptist, and then I went to St. Mary's High School. And probably it was going into my second year of St. Mary's High School, I became pregnant, so I was a teen mom at 17.
Right, right. So tell me, how did that affect you? Today, it's something that happens in the community, you know, in some cases rallies around young women. You know, there are programs available today. But how did it affect you at that time?
It was very rough for me. It was very rough for my family. It was rough for my mother. My family is very involved in politics at the time. I had a decision to make, and my decision was to keep my child. And like I said, it was very tough being a teen mom. I attended Polly McCabe, which at the time was located in the church at St. Luke's on Whaley Avenue. And I attended there for a year or so, and I finally dropped out of there. But I was fortunate in the fact that I had a very good education coming from private school. So I eventually went back, and I just got my GED. I came out of high school altogether. So technically speaking, I only went to the ninth grade in high school,
wow.
Traditional high school.
Wow.
But by the time my son was 3 years old, I went to Hampden High School, and I passed the GED, and my son was probably like around three years of age.
I know that had to be difficult because during that period of time, you know, people frowned on that. It wasn't viewed the same way as today, right?
Yes, sir. It was very difficult. There were times when I was depressed. There were times when I was stressed. But I never looked at my son as a mistake. I looked at him as a blessing. And I just moved forward. I wanted to go to college right out of high school. That did not happen. My mother made it clear that if I made the decision to become a teen mom, that I was going to be responsible for my child. My son's father was basically absent in his life after my son was 3 years of age. So I took on becoming a single mom, and I went to cosmetology school. I attended Wilford Academy here in New Haven on Crown Street. And it was difficult, but I moved forward. And so my first career was a professional. I worked as a professional cosmetologist. That was my first career.
Wow, wow. Oh, man, so what a journey, because, you've done quite a lot. You know, you actually were a 2013 recipient of the Bill and Melinda Gates Fellowship Award. And of course, you became a librarian. But, you know, tell me about your journey there. Let's talk about that journey. So, cosmetology?
I did cosmetology for about 10 or 12 years and did a little bit of retail. Focused quite a bit on my son in school because I was a single mother and he was a black male. I knew how important that was to
Yes.
raise him right. Spent a lot of time with him in school. And as time moved on, I decided that I wanted to go back to school. So in 1984, I enrolled in Southern Connecticut State University and began working on a bachelor's degree in communications. And it was tough because I needed to work full-time, go to school full-time, and I had my son who was attending Jackie Robinson Middle School at the time, and I did not have transportation. I would walk from my home on Division Street. I had my own apartment, 215 Division Street, and I would walk from there over to Southern Connecticut State University, and some days I would stop and pick my son up, and he and I would walk around the water. cold winter evenings to Southern Connecticut University. He would sit in classes with me, and we would walk back home. And I did that for a few years, and it was very tiring. So in 1986, I dropped out and went back to doing some cosmetology work and some retail work, and just figured as my son got a little bit older, at some point I would go back to school and, finish my college degree.
Raising a black son, right? Today, very difficult because you worried whether they're going to come back home.
Yes.
Right? While you were raising them, you know, as a teenager and so forth and so on, right? You know, tell me about the kinds of talks that you had with him.
Well, my son and I, because there was not that much of an age difference, we spent, people who know me, who grew up in New Haven, who knew me, when you saw me, you saw my son. My son was with me. We went everywhere together. And we had like a big sister, little brother relationship. There were lines drawn. He knew exactly, you know, that I was the mother. To this day, my son is 42 years of age. He's never disrespected me. He's never called me out of my name. If we disagree, we disagree to disagree. We sit down, we talk about things. And that's the way it's always been. I remember growing up with him. I grew up on Division Street, 244 Division Street. And Wendell Harp had built apartments across the street, 215 Division Street. So we lived diagonally across from my mom. That's where I raised my son. So we would skateboard down Division Street Hill, roller skate, jump rope, ride bikes. He taught me all about the games that him and his friends would play. And my apartment was the apartment that all the young men would come to. There was no smoking, no drinking in my home. So all the other mothers in the neighborhood, most of them single mothers, would allow their young sons to come to my home and be with myself and my son. And it was really, really great. My son still has friendship with those young men to this day. And I'm just blessed, and I thank God that he protected myself and my son. And the talks that we would have were very candid, very open, very honest. I never lied to him about anything. I when people ask me about bringing him up, one thing that I remember, one day he came to me, and he was in Jackie Robinson Middle School, and they were having classes about sex education. And they were talking about abortion. And he came home. Some teacher or someone had made a comment about, you know, being a teen mom and having children young and bringing children into the world by mistake. And he came home, and he used to call me Diane, and he said, "Diane, am I a mistake?" And I sat down and had a long, long conversation with him. And to this day, I can say the same thing that I said to him then. He's the best thing that ever happened to my life. My son is a beautiful example of a young black man. He attended James Hill House High School. He attended school right in New Haven on public school system. He was very laid back, and to this day, he's still very laid back. Never had any problems with him hanging with the wrong crowd, being disrespectful to teachers. He was a little bit too laid back at times. He had to turn around. My foot was always there, and I was very strict. People that knows, I was a very strict mom to be a teen mom, but I read a lot of books, and I spoke to other black males that were in the community. And they would always say, "Give me advice and tell me things that I can do." And then when my son was 10, I was fortunate enough to meet a man that I married. He's my ex-husband now, Clifton Petaway. And I have to give him props because he was the only father that my son ever knew. And he didn't drink. He didn't smoke. He didn't hang out, per se, in the street like that, club life. I mean, he went out and had a good time, but he was the best role model. And I say to this day, my marriage may not have worked. We were together for a total of 25 years. But I really believe, and he believes himself to this day, one of the main reasons he was put into my life was for my son. And he's also an excellent grandfather to my grandchildren. So I was blessed with that. Very blessed.
This is Juan Castillo. I'm speaking with Diane Brown. She's the branch manager of Stetson Library. And we're talking about her life and how, you know, she raised her son as a single mom. And, you know, some of the, you know, the issues that she had to deal with raising a black son, you know, and so the rest of your family, talk about the rest of your family and talk about how important that was in your life.
Well, I'll start with my oldest brother who passed away a little over a year ago. My eldest brother, Frank Brown, he was in the military, much older than I am. In fact, my two brothers were old enough to be my father. My mother had me very late in life. He was a musician, very well known in New Haven. He played an instrument called the vibes. And so I grew up in a house with music, lots of music on the third floor. And he was a very intelligent brother. My mother would send my sister and I out to California every summer to visit my father, my then father, and who was living at the time, and my eldest brother, who I'm speaking of now. And we was a part of the People's Park when they had the smoke bombs in People's Park, when the whole civil rights movement, the whole thing of the Black Panther Party,
yes,
was big in California, in Oakland, California, in Berkeley, in San Francisco.
You were getting exposed to that.
So we were exposed to that at a very young age.
Wow.
My brother that's just under him, who is still living, he is a retiree of Pratt & Whitney. And he, like I said, lives in Wallingford, Connecticut. Very quiet, typical, the males in my family, quiet, very intelligent, laid back. My sister, underneath him, my eldest sister, Carol Brown, attorney Carol Brown, she passed away about 4 years ago now, and she was an attorney here in New Haven, had her own law firm. She, very intelligent, very much a go-getter, didn't take anything from anybody. People consider, you know, those Brown sisters raised a lot of hell. But I think it basically came from my mom. My mom basically raised us as a single mother. My dad left home when I was 3. So my mom raised us as a single mother. So she had no choice but to raise us in a way that we could fend for ourselves. And so that's why me and my sisters all basically have the same attitude. The sister underneath her, my sister Lillian Collin, who's still living. She resides, has a home in Hamden, Connecticut now. She's a retired social worker. Very much the same thing.
Big family.
Doesn't take too much. Yes, sir. It doesn't take too much from anybody. And then my sister Sally, who's right over me, city town clerk for New Haven. Very strong. Followed my mother's footsteps in politics.
Yes.
She was a politician like my mom. So I come from a very big family. And also influenced by my older brothers and sisters, and watching the things that they had to go through in life and how they struggled through what they had to struggle through. And those things also helped me.
Your educational journey, you know, took you in all kinds of different directions, okay, which ended up you really getting into the library sciences, right?
Yes.
Earlier you mentioned the importance of reading, that you read a lot, and that was real important, right? Talk about that growth and that journey.
Well, coming up, I grew up in 1957. I don't have my age. I'm 59. I grew up in 1957 in New Haven, the 60s, the 70s. And my family was very conscious. I, no disrespect to anyone, I did not have a white Jesus on my wall. Jesus on my wall was black. And my mother was very prideful. My mother taught us as much as she knew about our culture, our history. We were taught to be very proud of who we were. There were times when it was difficult for me going to basically an all-white Catholic school. There was a sprinkling, a few of us. But my mother made it clear, I'm not sending you here to assimilate. I'm sending you to that school because the education there is better. Your hair is kinky. Your skin is brown, and that's who you are, and that's who you'll continue to be. And you're just as good as they are, anyone that's sitting next to you in class. So at an early age, I was always what people would consider an overachiever. Never wanted anything less than an A. I always strive in my life to get A's. When I dropped out of Southern Connecticut in 1986, I knew in my heart that I always wanted to have a college degree. I didn't know what for. I just wanted to go because to this day, I like school. So I went back to Southern Connecticut University in 1995 with my son. My son graduated from Hill House High School, and we made a decision that we would go to Southern Connecticut together.
Wow.
We actually took classes together. We had fun, I could say.
It's awesome.
We laughed in classes, and, you know, we got scolded a few times, me being the mother. But it was a lot of fun. It was a learning experience. I got to see another side of him, and we spent a lot of time studying together. And that's when I graduated from Southern Connecticut University with a bachelor's degree in communications and English. And from there, I came out, and I went to work for the city of New Haven. I worked for Jim Newton. He's gone from us now.
Yes.
But Jim Newton was the director of the Job Center in the Science Park.
Yes.
And Jim Newton hired me, not so much for my skill set that I had, even though I had the skill set he was looking for. He hired me because he liked my interpersonal skills, and he liked the way I worked with people and how I was around people. And he said, there's going to be some people that are going to be coming through the Job Center that have some serious problems and some serious issues.
Tell me about the experience there, and what did you do and what did you learn?
Many people there, single mothers, brothers from out of prison, just people that were really down on their luck. And my job was to go out, find corporations and organizations that would give these people a chance.
Hand up.
And so I worked closely with Amtrak.
Wow.
I worked with Foxwoods, Yale New Haven Hospital. There was a couple other corporations that I worked with. And my job, my hiring rate when I left was at 87%. So I really went in and showed people how to sell themselves. You have to remember, no matter what you've done in life, there's a skill set. I told the young brothers who were drug dealers, it takes a certain amount of skill to be a drug dealer. Nothing to be proud of. But the same skills that you use to be a drug dealer, let's write those skills down on a piece of paper and let's turn them around. And it's your job to go in there to speak properly, dress properly, and go in there and sell yourself.
Organizational skills.
Yes.
Management skills.
Yes.
You know, financial, fiscal management skills.
I had a young man that sat at my desk for an hour, and he explained to me the whole organization of drug sell on the street. How that whole organizational chart.
Marketing.
Exactly. And when I sat down and I took that, I went home that night and I was like, wow. He's still around. I won't say his name. He's still around. His brother's doing good.
Great.
And I sat down and I looked at what he gave me and I took it home and I changed all of the wording, flipped everything around, gave him a resume. I said, okay, so what we're going to do now is I'm going to send you to Amtrak. And you're not going to lie. You're going to tell them the truth about your background. He didn't have any, those small, too small drug offenses, felonies, nothing, no violent offenses, no domestic violence. To that day, that brother's still working at Amtrak.
That's awesome.
He's still at Amtrak. And we took what he had and we turned it around and he went in and he sold himself to the recruiter.
And when you spoke, to the businesses, you also came with the truth.
Came exactly
right?
With the truth. I said some of the best workers are people that you're turning your head to, and somebody needs to give them a chance. Everybody deserves a chance. This could be your son. This could be your daughter. So, if you're telling them that they've already served their time in prison, and they come out, now no one's willing to give them a chance. Are they serving a life sentence? When does it end?
Yes.
When does it end? So I was their advocate, and I did that for several years until Jim Newton decided he was going to run for mayor against John DeStefano, and I supported him. And politically, that didn't... I knew what I was getting myself into clearly, coming from a family of politicians. But it was a conscious decision that I made, and I was willing to sacrifice. And so my job was moved into another building on the boulevard, and it was just a matter of time. I was on a special funded program. The other individuals that worked with me were taken out of that particular job center and moved to another location, and that's how I ended up in the library. That's how I ended up in the library.
So you end up in the library.
I ended up in the library okay. Because the former legislative assistant to John DeStefano, Chuck Allen,
yes,
was a very good friend of the family. And I saw Chuck one day, and we were talking, and I said, you know, Chuck, I want to go back to school and get a master's degree, but I'm not sure on what. And politically, I think I'm about run myself out of this job because of my support for Jim Newton. And he said, you know, Diane, I just come from a department head meeting, and we have the first black library director. You know, the library director in New Haven oversees all five locations in New Haven. And he's a brother from out of Baltimore, Maryland. And I think you'll like him. I think you should make an appointment and go see him. You can tell him that I sent you. His name is James Wellborn. So I called Mr. Wellborn up the next day, because I'm a doer. People who know me, I'll just do things right on the spot. I'm not a procrastinator. So I called Mr. Wellborn up, set up an appointment, and he saw me 2 days later. After my hour and a half long meeting with him, I walked out of there with some direction, knew what I wanted to do, and I was convinced that I wanted to be a librarian. And he promised me, if you go to school and get a master's degree in library sciences, I will mentor you, and I will help you find money to go back to school.
That is the last thing in the world that most black people think about in terms of careers.
Especially me, I think when people find out Diane's going to be a librarian, I mean, what made you decide to be a librarian? My final decision is when Mr. Wellborn looked at my resume. He saw all the things that I had done in the past. He said, I see you like to advocate for your people. That's who you are. And I said, yes, sir. And he said, and not just people of color, but you just always, your resume here tells me that you're always for the forgotten, for the downtrodden, for the people that other people walk by every day. And I said, yes, Mr. Wellborn, that's a part of who I am. And he said, why is that? And I said, well, Mr. Wellborn, at one point I felt like I was one of those forgotten people. So we started talking about me being a teen mom. And he says, well, the face of libraries are changing, Diane. You go back to school and get that master's degree in library sciences, and you come on back to New Haven Free Public Library, we'll find a job for you. One open up, we'll give you an opportunity to come in. Because I have a whole slew of homeless people down here at the main library that need jobs. I have so many things going on around this system, and I can use someone like you. And oh, by the way, he said, did you know how few black librarians there are? Let alone in America, in the world. And I said, no, Mr. Wellborn. He said, well, Diane, there's about 120,000 credentialed librarians in the world. And out of that, maybe 4,000 or 5,000 are black. And I said, are you serious, Mr. Wellborn? He said, I'm serious. He said, and I'm one of them that helped to pave the way. I had to create a program for black librarians. Because even though they were accepted into schools to become librarians, they weren't always treated well. He said, it's not over yet. The fight's not over. So he says, I've mentored many people, and I'd like to mentor you. So I went away, and I love to do research, and I researched Mr. Wellborn. I found out that Mr. Wellborn was a hellraiser in his own right. I mean, this brother did a lot to fight for black librarians. So he gave me some information. I went over, and it happened so fast. I went over to Southern Connecticut University. 3 days later, they pulled my transcripts. I went over to see the department chair of library sciences. Mr. Wellborn called Dr. Jane McGinn, who was an African-American professor of library sciences over there, Dr. McGinn. They pulled my information. I had to go out and take my GREs the next week. Didn't have any time to study.
What are those?
GREs. It's like it's like SATs.
Okay.
On a higher level.
Okay.
And I'll be honest with you, Juan. I mean, there were some things that were familiar because I went to private school. But anyone today can tell you GRE testing is tough. It's very tough. But I just had faith that I was going to make it because the track was moving too fast.
Yes.
So I went next week, signed up, took the GREs. 2 weeks later, got my acceptance letter that I was accepted into the program at Southern Connecticut, Information Technology and Library Sciences. I was on my way to get my master's degree in library sciences. Mr. Wellborn called me the next day. The next day when I told him that I got accepted into library school, the next day he called me and said, well, we finally got your letter from City Hall, from Department of Human Resources. Your position as a pre-employment training instructor with the library will end on June 30th. Mr. Wellborn had taken me from that office there and moved me on the boulevard into the library to finish out my last several months. We
yes.
didn't know when it was going to end, but we knew it was coming. I said, okay. Mr. Wellborn said, well, what's your plan now? I said, well, I'm going to go home. I'm going to think about it. I'm going to come back with a plan. I came back the next day. I said, well, Mr. Wellborn, at the time, you could collect unemployment for close to 2 years.
Right.
I said, okay, Mr. Wellborn, I'm going to go to school full time and collect unemployment, and I'll concentrate on my master's degree in library sciences. He said, well, you know, most people dying usually do it in about 3 or 4 years, Ms. Wellborn. I don't have that much time. I got to take care of myself. So I went back to Southern Connecticut, and I completed my master's degree in library sciences in 2 semesters. I took 18 credits each semester. And when I tell you, I don't know how I did it, to this day, I don't know how I did it. I just studied day and night, day and night. And at the same time, I was going through a divorce.
Wow.
So if I can be candid, I was going
yes,
through a divorce.
Yes, yes.
But I focused on the end result of getting this master's degree in library sciences. And I also volunteered at Stetson Branch and volunteered at the main library downtown because Mr. Wellborn had some projects that he had me working on, one of which was working with the Institute for Museums and Library Services. It's the IMLS grant. They had money to send individuals of color back to school to become librarians. And we had a few Spanish-speaking individuals in our system at the time that also wanted to be librarians. And Mr. Wellborn put me over that pot of money. It was like something like about $100,000 to send individuals back to school. So that was my way of giving back to him, to help him, because to be totally honest with you, at the time, there was no one in administration, in his administration, that was willing to do that work, to try to get other people of color to go back to school. And I said, Mr. Wellborn, I'll do it because this is my way of working with you because you said this was a continuous fight. And my road into the New Haven Free Public Library, outside of not being a librarian, just being there, it was very difficult as a black librarian. I thought it would be a little bit better once I got my credentials, but it was worse because I really did it. So for people that didn't look like me that was in the system, she really did it. She finished that MLS in 2 semesters, and she's back here now. And my first job was a young adult librarian. It was the first position to open up after, just before I finished my degree. No one applied for the position but me because nobody wanted to work with teens. That was my first professional introduction as a professional librarian at the New Haven Free Public Library. I was a young adult librarian. And Mr. Wellborn had me spend a day a week in each location. So my office was basically in the back of my Jeep. And I would go to each location 5 days a week and some Saturdays and work with the teens around the city, asking them what kind of services they wanted. No one wanted to work with the teen population.
Got to stop you for a second. I just want to remind everyone that I am interviewing right now New Haven resident Diane Brown. She's a branch manager at Stetson Library, and we're going through her journey with her life, but also you know, in the library system here in the city. And we're at the point now where she had actually started getting mentored, and so important in our community.
Yes,
and in fact, you know, went back to school and got her master's in the library sciences. And now she has, in fact, you know, graduated and now went back into the New Haven Free Library and doing work there with the youth. So let's pick it up from there, right? What did you discover once you got into this position?
What I discovered was several things. I discovered that I liked the work that I was doing. I discovered that there was very much race is something that you're going to deal with every day, whether your eyes are open, whether they're closed, whether you fall asleep, whether you're wide awake. And I just felt like in the New Haven Free Public Library system at the time, there was just no one that really understood what were the needs of the African-American community. Not saying anything negative about any one person or any one system. You can't do what you don't know.
And just, I want to interrupt you for a second because maybe you could explain this, right? I mean, you know, when people think of libraries, right? You know, you get a library card, you go in the library and you get a book, or you take out books or you read while you're there. But it's a lot more than that. The library is a whole lot more than that, right?
Yes.
Can you talk about that?
Yes, well, from my end, from a professional librarian's end, it's more than what, I'll speak on both sides, it's more than what you see from the outside. There are books to be cataloged, budgets. I, being a branch manager, I have to maintain an entire building, an entire space. I have to train staff, monitor, supervise staff. I have to do strategic planning. There are two unions that work within my system. I have to follow union guidelines, reports, fiscal management. It's like being a branch manager, my position, even though I'm a part of the New Haven Free Public Library system, my responsibility is to run the entire operation of that library. From the minute the door opens, anything that happens throughout the day until the door closes, my director has certain expectations of me to maintain that space.
Now, I mean, you know, I grew up in Brooklyn, so I went to the Brooklyn Library, which is huge, right?
Yeah.
And I don't remember as a kid, right, going to the library for programs, right? Mm-hmm. But when I, you know, I get your emails about all the stuff that's going on, right?
Yes,
you got programs and you bring people in and you bring authors, but, you know, you do a lot more. Talk about that, right? Because that's important.
The reason House Stetson Library got to where it is now, two reasons. Libraries traditionally, slowly starting to move away from that. We have an association called the American Library Association.
Yes.
Carla Hayden, who is the first Black Library of Congress, will also speak of this, who Barack Obama brought in. Libraries are more than just places where people check out books. Nowadays, they are. I started a little bit early. I was ahead of the time a little bit for this part of New England.
Yes.
My director, Mr. Wellborn, had told me early on that I was going to have a problem with Stetson Branch in the library world, quote unquote, because libraries were for the most part judged by how many books they circulate or how many items they circulated per month. Stetson Library was the lowest circulating branch in the system. In fact, our numbers are growing. In fact, we are still technically the lowest circulating branch of items. Items meaning magazines, books, DVDs, CDs, what other...
That people are checking out.
That people are checking out.
Okay.
Okay, so that helps to bring in dollars. Whether you're applying for a grant, whether the money comes from the state, federal government, the people want to know when the director puts in reports, when the board puts in reports, well, how many items are you circulating? How well used is are your branches?
And that's interesting because with the internet now and people going to other sources for information, that must be very difficult.
Yes. So we also now have ways of tracking internet, public internet use.
Okay.
Digital resources that people can have access to within the library and gain access to outside the library with their library card, databases.
Okay.
We have all those kinds of things. But what's interesting is at that time when I became the branch manager at Stetson in 2006, Mr. Wellborn told me then, who's a former director, God bless him, he's gone now, he said, well, Diane, you're going to have to do something to supplement for the fact that you don't have high circulation. What are you going to do? And he gave me some websites. I started looking on some websites at big library systems like New York City. In 2005, 2004, they were doing book talks and dance programs. They were doing all sorts of things. And couple that with the Dixwell Community House no longer being across the street from my branch.
Yes.
And now we have all these young, especially younger people in the community, no place to go and nothing to do. And here I sit as a library. So I started going out into the community, surveying the community. What would you like here at Stetson Library? We're tired of sitting behind the desk waiting for people to come in and check books in and out. I was out in every school. My service area is from Broadway all the way back to the Hampton Town Line. So any school, Hill House High School, Jackie Robinson, Wexler Grant, Lincoln Bassett, those are all in my service area. So outside of class visits and we would go out to the schools, we were doing everything that we could. Circulation was rising, but not where we really could see some significant numbers. So I started doing programs. I started bringing authors in. Some of the highlights, we brought Donna Hills, an African-American author. I went down to the book fair down in Harlem, and I asked Donna Hill, would she come to my library? And I told her exactly why. And she said, sister, I'll come. And she came, didn't charge the library system a penny. She came. Lucy Ann Hurston, Zora Neale Hurston's niece, came and did a book talk. Marlon Briscoe, quarterback,
yes,
came and did a book talk. Connie Napier from Tuskegee Airmen came and did a show. Steve Perry came.
Yes.
Gerald Damien came and did a program with my children. And, of course, Chris Big Dog Davis.
Just did a program
the
there.
Big thing that we did at
yes.
Stetson. So I began to realize early on that if I can bring people in for programs and set up programs and bring out books from my collection that were attached to or that were relative to the program, people would then begin to check out the books. And it worked. So for the last several years, our circulation, you know, it's up, down, up, down. For the last 3 months, because of the programming that we've been running about music and producing and production and those kinds of things, and I don't fudge numbers. I give the raw numbers. If I checked out two books, two books. If I checked out 700, it's 700. For the last 2 months, we've checked out close to 1,000, which is excellent for Stetson. So I know that we're on the right track because we're listening to the community. And when we do these programs, the mothers, the children, the grandmothers, people come out and participate. We do other programs, like we have a huge program called Africa Is Me. Sister Hanan Hameen comes in and does this cultural arts program every third Saturday of the month. That's a very big program. We have Sport Academy. Brother Sean Reeves and Ed Trimble, we have anywhere between 10, 15, sometimes 20 youth play chess every Saturday from 10 to 12 o'clock. And I mean, they sit and they play chess. So we have homework help that's consistent every day. We have one-on-one computer lessons, group computer lessons, technology lessons. We have people that you could have just purchased a brand new iPhone and you're 57, 58, 60 years old and your grandchildren just gave you this iPhone. True story. And you come in and say, I don't know what the heck this is and how do I use this?
Yes.
Well, we have a technologist.
Nice.
LTA, library technologist.
Assistant. Great.
She will help you learn how to use that iPhone that someone just gave you. So we just now, we learned that answering to the needs of the community. Now, was I met with some setback, you know, and talk back? Yeah, I mean, my former director didn't care for all that programming. We're a library. We don't do that program. I said, well, you know what? Libraries need to learn how to reinvent themselves.
Be an extension of the community.
You have to be an extension of the community because, as you said, everyone's not going to check out a book. But you'll be surprised there are people who have technology but won't use it to read. They want a book in their hand.
Yes.
You know? So it's a matter of opening your eyes up and not being stuck to one way of doing things. There's going to always be librarians who feel as though there's just one way to provide library services. But I'm glad that I came in at a time and my eyes were open enough and I had a mentor that showed me, you have to reinvent this thing, Diane. Because when I came out of library school, it was libraries are going to lose their funding and close up because now we have the internet. But you got to realize one of the biggest points I'm going to make today is technology is there, but the digital divide is growing larger.
It is. Larger. Absolutely.
You can have a laptop or an iPad or something at home. Maybe you don't have a printer. You can have all of the hardware, but don't have internet.
Don't have no Wi-Fi.
You don't have Wi-Fi.
That's right.
So very few families that live in my neighborhood have all of what they need.
Now you have Wi-Fi.
I have Wi-Fi.
There you go.
It's also accessible. I shouldn't say this, but you could, if you're right outside the proximity of the branch, you could tap into Stetson Wi-Fi. We have adults that come in looking for jobs every day.
Now, you had mentioned earlier, I'm going to tie it in now to raising your son, right? And one of the things that really, really got me was the fact that, you know, people ask me all the time, like, you know, how do we reach our kids and how do we reach kids and how do we maintain our kids in a great frame of mind to be able to go through everything that they have to go through, you know, growing up today, right? And I talk about, you know, spending time with your kids. You know, my relationship with my daughter was really the foundation of it was that we did homework every day. And that I helped her write papers because I was pretty good at that in college. So even with her first 2 years of college, I would go up there and her friends would joke with her like, your dad is coming up here helping you with me. You know, and then after a while she said, Dad, you don't need to come here anymore because I got this now, right? But our relationship was born out of that, right? That was the foundation. You spent a lot of time with your son, right? And that's what you mentioned. That's how you guys grew.
Yes.
Your relationship grew together. And so spending time with people, with kids, right? With young people. Right across the street, you got the Q House. We got a new one coming, right?
Yes,
but it's been gone for a long time.
Yes, sir.
Right? And so the library, as I see it, by having kids come to your library,
yes,
they get a chance to spend time with adults and with each other.
Yes, sir.
Which is really what it's all about. That is the answer. That is part of the answer.
Yes.
You know? So, yeah. So, I just wanted to mention that. You know what I mean? How important it is and what you do.
Well, people who know me know that children are my heart. Every day we have a following. We call them a following. So, we have probably about 15 to 20 children, same children, that come to Stetson every day. In fact, this is going to be broadcast so people will be able to hear it. There are mothers and grandmothers who will tell you their children aren't allowed to go anywhere else in the neighborhood once they leave the house but Stetson Library.
Right.
I serve as a mother, grandmother, My staff and I are very close. I have Rhonda Taylor, who's my library assistant. I have Rory Materano, who is a library technical assistant. And I have Philip Modine, who's my children's librarian. And I have Marquise Waters, who is a part-time aide. And we are very close as a staff. In fact, this evening we're going to see a movie together. We do that quite a bit.
Nice.
And we go out to eat. So I say all that to say, we are an extension of those families. When I see those young mothers that come in, some of them ask to see me in private in my office. They're crying because, you know what, Juan, it's not just about the children. Most of these mothers that come in, I would say 99% of them, I could be their mother. So their children are more like my grandchildren. They come in and share real things with me,
yeah,
real stories with me. And I offer them advice. Sometimes they just want someone to listen to them. So Stetson Library is just that. We are an extension. And the mothers will tell them, when I'm not around and you're in that library, you better do what Miss Diane tells you to do.
This is what you do for them.
Yes.
What does this job do for you?
This job does for me what I feel is my calling. I believe my calling has always been, every job I've always had, it's always been about helping someone. Every job, every single job I've ever had. And what it does for me, I go home at the end of the day saying, I did something for somebody, even if I just gave a little piece of advice, if I helped a child with one math problem, if I pulled some books for a teacher who was struggling to teach a class.
You love going to work every day.
And I get up every morning, and I love going to work every day.
It's nice.
And it doesn't get any better than that.
Right.
To be able to say, not only do I have a job, but I have a job that I love, and the community around me, I'm an extension of all those families. And they cook for me and my staff. They're good to me and my staff. So anything that I can do for them, I'm always there.
You've gotten a lot of awards, but you're getting an award,
In February.
Yes. And this one, I think, is extremely important because the West Haven Black Coalition,
yes,
honors folks that, do it because they love it.
Yes, yes.
And Ms. Carol E. Brown,
yes,
has decided that she's going to give you an award this year.
Yes,
how important that is. What's the date on that, by the way?
I believe Carol's going to get me. Is it February 20? It's the last Saturday in February.
Yeah, and we're advertising on a YBC, so
Carol, don't get me.
Yeah, so Carol, you know we're putting that over the air along with all the other folks that you're honoring. But talk about that award.
Well, when Carol called me, I've won awards in the past, and when Carol called me and I went down to see her, it meant much to me because I know Carol. Carol's like a family member. In fact, my sister, I had a sister that passed, Carol Brown, and people will confuse the two names all the time. But it meant much, it meant quite a bit for me coming from Carol Brown because I know the kind of work that she is. And Carol is the type of woman that is very strong in being a black woman. She's very conscious. She's very aware of what's happening around her, her surroundings, and the world that's around her. And she, to get that recognition from someone who is real like that means much to me.
I got the date, February 25th,
okay.
And that's going to be at Fantasia in North Haven. And, you know, if you listen to YBC, you'll be able to know how you can get tickets for that. And that's going to be on Saturday, again, February 25th. Thank you so much for coming. Before you leave, though, right, what's the best advice you ever got and from who?
I want to say two real quick last
things. Oh, no, go ahead. You got time. Go ahead.
This is really quick.
Absolutely.
I get awards from the community, and receiving from your own and people that you serve every day is a great thing. But one thing that I want to mention is when I got the award from the American Library Association,
yes,
that was really shocking. that I got the award from the American Library Association. Remember, a couple of thousand librarians across the country. Very, very small percentage, 3,000 or 4,000 African American.
Yes.
And I was actually nominated by Dawn LaValle from the State Library in Hartford. And I was nominated, and when the woman called to tell me that I had won, I thought it was a telemarker. And I didn't even really accept it as real.
Right.
And what that does, not that I'm, you know, to get an award from the American Library Association is like a Grammy.
Yes.
Or an Oscar. Because yes. the American Library Association is like at the top.
Right.
They set legislation and they kind of basically oversee librarians in America. That was an honor for me as an African American to go down and receive that award. And I used that platform of that award to inspire other African American librarians who have found me on Facebook, emailed me, got my phone number, text me. And to date, I have about a good 9 African American librarians across this country that I mentor through some form or other social media.
Like Mr. Welburn did for you.
Like he did for me. So then that's awesome. Important for me to give back.
Yes.
Because I'm not going to be around forever.
Yes.
And one of the last things I'm going to say before I answer your question is, right now I'm looking for some African Americans locally to mentor.
Great. Wonderful.
Very much interested in the field of librarianship, and all they need to do is come to 200 Dixwell Avenue, Stetson Branch Library, and let's sit down and talk about it.
Well, you've heard it. So again, best advice, and who, and from who?
The best advice I ever got came from my mentor, James Welborn. And I was going through a tough time at the New England Free Public Library, dealing with race and quite a few other things. People not understanding my culture, who I am, the services I was trying to provide to the African American community through the library. And I went to his office one day, very teary-eyed. And I said, Mr. Welborn, I'm just stuck right now. And I don't know what to do, and I need you to give me some advice. After we talked for about 20 minutes, he said, I'm going to put it to you this way. You have to learn, when you get stuck like this, you have to learn to roll over or you'll die. Every time you get in deep thought that you're stuck, anytime you're in any situation, whether it's a personal relationship, I don't care, it's job-related, Diane, I don't care what it is. You always have to roll over. And I said, so Mr. Welborn, just explain to me a little bit more about what does roll over mean. Get up and move. Don't sit there in it. Don't waddle in it. Get up and move. Because if you don't move, you're going to sit right there and you're going to die in it. So that's the best piece of advice. And every time I get stuck to this day, I get up and start moving. Mentally, physically, spiritually, I just get up and I keep it moving.
That's awesome. First of all, I just want to, you know, personally, you know, and this radio station, just let you know that we recognize the work that you have done. And we are so proud that you are doing it.
Thank you so much.
And you know, this interview has been a long time coming. So again, thank you so much for coming.
Thank you, Juan.
All righty. Juan Castillo with you. This is the Electric Drum. Of course, I know you've been inspired. I have. Keep it right here, and I'll check you out next week right here on the Electric Drum. 94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city.
Upgrade your laundry routine with a durable and reliable Maytag laundry pair at Lowe's. Like the new Maytag washer and dryer with performance-enhanced stain-fighting power designed to cut through serious dirt and grime. And what's great is this laundry pair is in stock and ready for delivery when you need it the most. Don't miss out. Shop Maytag in-store or online today at Lowe's.